So my question for you coming out of Father's Day weekend, and I hope you had a great weekend, is what are the ramifications? What should the ramifications be for you if you steal a vehicle? If you, by the way, have an armed stealing of that vehicle, if then the police try to track you down the day following your armed carjacking, you then flee the police in your car, you then flee the police on foot, and you end up getting shot and killed. What are the repercussions for somebody going through that process? That's what I want to ask you as we start another week here on KCMO Talk Radio. And the reason I bring this up is because that is exactly what happened over the weekend involving Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, the KCK Police Department, and an alleged armed carjacking that took place in the city over the last couple of days. And the response in this has been truly outstanding. More like unbelievable. Outstanding might be one way to describe it, but unbelievable is probably the better way to describe it. Everything that I just told you had allegedly happened over the weekend involving one individual. That individual tragically, and I say tragically because anytime someone dies, it's tragic, was tragically shot and killed by police. But this came after an armed carjacking, allegedly. This came after police tried to pull the suspect over. This came after the suspect led the police on a high-speed chase from KCMO to KCK. And this came after the alleged suspect shot at police. Yet here we are having a conversation on a Monday morning, and some are trying to have a conversation on a Monday morning as to whether or not the police are in the wrong on all of this, which truly is stunning to me, but maybe I shouldn't be stunned. Maybe that's my fault. Maybe nothing involving this narrative should surprise me anymore. But I want to play for you the KCTV5 report that I'll play. It's two parts here I'm going to play for you. Part one just gives you a little bit more detail, a little bit more insight into what exactly was going on during this police chase. You're going to hear some footage from the police chase as well. And then we'll get the reaction from some people after the fact.
The suspect got away in this stolen vehicle, and KCK police alerted surrounding law enforcement. Fast forward to this morning. The car and a man matching the armed carjacking suspect description are spotted in KCMO. The suspect refuses to stop, and a chase ensues.
An officer behind an armed carjacking suspect.
Broadcastify Audio details the chase as it heads toward the state line on Independence Avenue.
He is driving in oncoming traffic. Now he's in the middle turn lane, still westbound through Brooklyn. Speed 70, traffic's moderate.
The chase goes through downtown and moves to I-70.
On KCK now.
The pursuit exits on 3rd Street.
We can get KCK up here. That'd be great.
One KCK officer joins the pursuit around 11:43, and the chase comes to an end near Parallel Parkway and 18th Street about 5 minutes later. KCK police say the suspect of the vehicle got out of the stolen car and ran. Then shots rang out.
We have one shot at the moment. The suspect or officers?
I'm with the suspect now. The suspect's pulling the shot.
Police say the suspect fired a gun at police. Then police returned fire. The man died later at a local hospital. No officers were hurt.
So that's just a part of Leslie Aguilar, KCTV5's report over the weekend regarding this this tragedy that took place in KCK. It went from KCMO, it went over to KCK, and police of both departments were involved in this incident. So we find ourselves, though, in the twilight zone because you just heard the story right there, right? Now, yes, the individual has not been convicted. I mean, the person, unfortunately, has deceased, but has not been convicted. But still, you've got an alleged armed carjacker who then is getting pulled over by police, who refuses to comply, who leads them on a high-speed chase, and then who, as of right now, body camera footage is showing, per the department, that the individual did shoot at police officers. They fire back, and the man ends up dead. Now, part two of this report from Leslie Aguilar is the response that we heard from some people in the vicinity, some people who are, you know, predictably trying to politicize this scenario and this situation, And here is just part of what they had to say.
Witnesses at the scene say they heard 9 shots, and many were upset that the confrontation with police happened the way it did.
Now, carjacking is important. We don't want criminals just being able to do anything and run free. But a carjacking where someone just stole a car shouldn't lead to high-speed pursuits in broad daylight, on holidays, and then somebody running on feet and then eventually dead.
And the chase people from Missouri, the chase left from Missouri and came over here. So we shouldn't have been chasing nobody because they always say not to chase.
KCPD's chase policy says officers will not initiate a vehicle pursuit unless they determine that there is a reasonable belief that the suspect vehicle or occupants presents a clear and immediate danger to the safety of others. Included in that danger is the commission of a dangerous felony, such as an armed carjacking. This is the first officer-involved shooting under KCK's new police chief, Carl Oakman, who is a former deputy chief for KCPD.
The police need to cool it down. And like I say, the police chief they have here now, I'm not worried about him. I know he's going to be good. And I'm sure he's going to put a lot of training in with the police department.
Officers for both departments involved in the chase and following shooting were wearing body cams, which KCK police say corroborate the story from police.
I guess here's my question for the lady there who was very critical of the police in this situation. I'd like to know, I mean, she says that new Chief Carl Oakman, who used to work at KCPD, she said that he is somebody who is she is not worried about, and he's going to train up these cops better. What's he going to train them up to do? When suspects start shooting at him, Carl Oakman's going to train him to say, hey, pretty please, please, can you stop shooting at me? It'd be really appreciated if you stopped shooting at me. You know, would you guys mind doing that for just a moment here? Can you please, sir, stop. Stop shooting. Stop firing your gun. I got a packet of Skittles for you if you stop shooting. I mean, is this how it's going to work? Is that the grand plan for Carl Oakman and KCK with that police department? I highly doubt it. Highly, highly doubt it. And then you heard the first gentleman there get quoted in that piece. His name is Terrence Maddox. He's the president of the local NAACP chapter. And I have no idea. Maybe you can help me with this at 576-7710. And our text line is 816-576-7710. What exactly does it being a holiday weekend have to do with anything? Well, seriously, what does it have to do with anything?
Well, it doesn't, but it was an attempt to run to the moral high ground and plant your flag. It was a holiday.
People are just minding
their own business.
It's Juneteenth and Father's Day. Yeah. You should be allowed at least one-arm carjacking, right? Is that the deal? One-arm carjacking, you're allowed to, rob a couple of convenience stores as well. You know, it's a two-for-one holiday weekend. So two-for-one crime, too. Special. Kansas City, Missouri, and KCK. That's how it works. What does that even mean? So I want to welcome you guys in at 576-7710 to kick off a Monday morning here on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, your smartphones and your smart speakers as well. Don't forget to stream us, of course, on the KCMO Talk Radio app, because I'm stunned that we're sitting here and we have all the details, essentially. Now, yes, everybody is technically innocent until proven guilty, but we have an alleged armed carjacker. We have audio of a high-speed police chase, and then we have body camera footage, per the police department, of a suspect shooting at police. And while it's tragic that somebody died, we still have excuses being made over how somehow the cops are in the wrong on this thing. And I simply can't wrap my head around it. I can't. And maybe you can help me with that, because if you're someone who just wants to live in a safe environment, by the way, if that's what you want, how do you not look at the story and say, boy, it's sad, but the police did their job in this thing? I'm just waiting for the Kansas City Star editorial board's piece about this. On holiday weekend, man should be allowed to steal car and run away from police without fear of death. Something like that. I don't know. I could see him writing a piece along those lines. 576-7710. Appreciate you guys joining us. We're off and running on a Monday morning here on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM and 103.7 FM. Oh, man, what do you think? Reparations for Kansas City.
Hey, Pete, what was in the weekend news dump?
That's great, John. That is so true. Conveniently, yeah, over the weekend, Kansas City finds itself with a group of other cities signing on to a pledge to develop reparations pilot projects. Yes, yes, yes. Kansas City is part of this list. 11 U.S. mayors jumping on board with this idea, from Los Angeles to tiny Tallahassee, Oklahoma. I don't know if that's the redheaded stepchild of Tallahassee, Florida. I'm not sure. I looked it up, and I used to live in Oklahoma, and I never heard of Tallahassee, but it's a town of 106 people. Now, I love small-town America, but, I mean, you know, Tallahassee, Oklahoma is not going to be the motivator to me in the policy that I create in Kansas City or anywhere else for that matter. But anyway, 11 U.S. mayors have pledged to pay reparations for slavery to a small group, and this is from the Associated Press, black residents in their cities, saying their aim is to set an example for their federal government on how a nationwide program should work. Now, Mayor Lucas has signed on to this. The other mayors on board are Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, Steve Adler of Austin, Texas, Steve Shewell of Durham, North Carolina, Esther Mayheimer of Asheville, North Carolina, Daryl Steinberg, Sacramento, California, Melvin Carter, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Keisha Curran of Tallahassee, Oklahoma, plus the new mayor of St. Louis as well, Tashara Jones. Now, you've probably got a lot of questions, right? I do. I mean, how are we paying for it? Who gets it? Who qualifies? How's this all going to work? Well, don't worry. Don't worry. Because we've got no answers, all right? We've got no answers. We've got no solutions. We've got no specifics. All we've got is a nice, fluffy letter that makes people feel good, okay? The Associated Press writes, the mayors had no details on how much it would cost, who would pay for it, or how people would be chosen. All those details will be worked out with the help of local commissions comprised of representatives from black-led organizations set up to advise the mayor of each city. But the mayors say they are committed to paying reparations instead of just talking about them. Okay, so they are, hey, don't you worry, they are committed to it, but they have no clue how they're going to do it. I mean, I am committed to being a billionaire. I don't know if you guys knew that, but I am committed to be a billionaire. I have zero idea and zero plans on how to do it, and I'm certainly in the wrong line of work for that, but I'm telling you, man, I am going to be a billionaire, and I am going to just tell you that I'm going to be a billionaire, and you're going to like it when I tell you it, and then if you ask me how, why, the plan, well, I've got nothing for you there, John.
Steve Martin had a deal back in the day about how to become a millionaire.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. How to be a millionaire. I can tell you how to do it. It's really easy. Okay, first you get $1 million. All right, now, you know, right? First you get $1 million. Then
then you try not to screw it up. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
First we get $1 billion. Then
why is this? This is really a theme in Kansas City over the last few weeks. Big ideas, zero details, zero plans. But let's say stuff and make people feel good about things and worry about the implications and, you know, the minutia, like how to pay for it later. That's kind of been a running theme lately. And I don't know why, because I genuinely believe that the mayor's, he is a bright guy. Even if you can't stand him, he's a bright guy. He's not a dummy at all. He's a very bright guy. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, for a guy that genuinely is a bright man to be talking about this stuff and signing on to these letters when these letters have zero details. Like, I would at least say, hey, even if you know, I was Mayor Lucas or anybody who was open to the idea of reparations, which I'm not for a plethora of reasons, but even if I was, I'd say, hey, guys, you know, this is cool. All right, you want to do this, but I got to see some details around it first. How do you determine who qualifies? How much would it cost? How will you pay for it? Like, I'm willing to watch you guys do your thing from afar. And then when you provide me more details, and I think that maybe there's some structure there, maybe I'll jump on board with that. Maybe I'll get down with that. Maybe I'm willing to hear a little bit more about that. But right now, to just be like, yep, we're doing reparations, and we have zero plans on how to do it, but trust me, we're doing it. It's going to be great. I'm kind of sitting here, and I'm like, it's comical. It's like embarrassing to have this grand idea and literally not be able to answer a single question about it. St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones, who was just elected in the last few weeks, she said in a statement, Black Americans don't just need another study that sits on a shelf. We need decisive action to address the racial wealth gap holding communities back across our country. Okay, so how are you implementing that action? I mean, that doesn't mean anything. When you say we need decisive action and then someone says, okay, how do you implement the said action? And you have zero answers, then you're not decisively actioning anything or decisively doing anything. You're saying we decisively need to start the conversation and put out this letter to maybe do something is all you're doing. That's it.
Yeah, right now the revealed details fit on a Post-it note.
Yeah.
And we're still with space, right?
With a lot of space, John. A lot of space. And part of what's going on here as well is what they're saying basically is we want to pressure the federal government who can just print money and print money and then print some more money. That's what's going on here. That's what's at play. 5767710. The text line is 816-576-7710. Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, said in a statement, let me be clear, cities will never have the funds to pay for reparations on our own. Okay, so you're admitting you don't know how you're going to pay for it, but that you can't pay for it. Okay, that's a start. Adding, when we have the laboratories of cities show that there is much more to embrace than fear, we know that we can inspire national action as well. That's a nice way of Eric Garcetti saying, give us money, please. Can you please give us money? Because we can't do this. We really want to do it, but we can't. It's like asking your parents, you know, for an allowance. That's what you're doing. You want something really bad. You can't afford the latest video game, but you really want it. So you're asking mom and dad for it. That's what you're doing. Now, Mayor Lucas did say to 41 Action News over the weekend about this. For Kansas City, Lucas told 41 Action News reparations would look more like investments and not individual checks to certain groups. Well, we've been doing that for a really long time. The idea that we don't have a single group or a single fund or, people in need, regardless of their skin color, don't get help. Which, by the way, how is that going to work? Are we going to start building tiny homes for the homeless all over Kansas City, but like black people get to the front of the line over white people? Because that's actually illegal. So how are you going to work that out if it's not going to be in the form of truly reparations in cash and it's going to be through investments? I mean, this thing is such a mess. I think it's designed to get national attention. I think it's designed to get people hits on MSNBC and CNN. And not much else. Not much. And oh, by the way, and if the federal government wants to give us money, we'll take it. And we'll do, trust me, it's in good hands. All right. It's in safe hands here. We'll take good care of it for you.
What do you suppose any of these people are bucking for a cabinet gig? You know?
Yeah. There might be some attention seeking possibly going on. That's for sure. Looking to move on up in the political realm. I don't know. But when you've got more questions and like not just more questions than answers, but like on a 10-to-1 ratio, you probably didn't roll this thing out too well. I want to get to your calls here and also your texts at 816-576-7710. Got to talk to Mark McCloskey, bottom of the hour. By the way, Politics in the Pint is going to be on Wednesday night. It's at the Blue Moose on Holmes Road. And we are just about sold out. It's going to be myself, Nathan Garrett, the now former Kansas City, Missouri police commissioner, is going to be joining us for a great night starting at 6 o'clock. I think we got a couple of spots left here. I got to check. You know what? I don't know if we do. It is. We are loaded up. It's going to be a hell of a night. So if you do want to RSVP, please do it now. Our friends at the Jackson County GOP are sponsoring it, co-sponsoring it with us. We appreciate them being a part of this. They are a great organization, and we'll see you all out there on Wednesday night. 5767710. Your calls, reparations for Kansas Cityans. What say you, as the great Bill O'Reilly would say? And where's the money coming from? And why are there so few answers around it? All that and more coming up on KCMO. Very good on the text line. Some of you guys, as we try to figure out why Kansas City jumped on this this letter with 11 or 10 other U.S. cities and mayors joining the call for reparations for black residents of their city. Good points on the text line here. Pete, I think we know where the $42 million from the police fund is going. And that's just a start. That is just a start. Yeah, I mean, this is wild. Over the weekend, kind of sneaking this one in, 11 U.S. mayors, including Mayor Lucas here on behalf of Kansas City, have pledged to pay reparations for slavery to a small group of black residents in their cities. And they really want to set the example for the federal government on how to do it. Now, they can't tell you what it costs. They can't tell you who's paying for it. They can't tell you how people would be chosen, but they can tell you it's a really good idea. Oh, you think you need more details to actually have a good idea? No, you don't. Not in government. Not in government, you don't. Sherry's in Overland Park. Hey, Sherry, good morning.
Good morning, Pete.
How are you? What's going on?
I'm doing well, and if they want to do reparations, it should be a house-to-house opt-in, opt-out. You should not be able to claim it on your taxes, and if you want to personally write a check, you can for whatever amount you want, but it should not come out of already collected taxes or future collected taxes.
So you're saying you set up maybe like a GoFundMe. Someone in Kansas City or the city sets up a GoFundMe saying, if you want to contribute to reparations, here's how you can contribute. Or you could even maybe like Venmo, you know, someone in the city. How's that sound?
No. Put your money where your mouth is, where your heart is. But I personally don't care to. I have East Coast residents who were part of the Civil War, people that actually died fighting for the freedom of the slaves, so I probably should get reparations for the family and the money that I lost, but I don't need it. But also,
Well, you're onto something there. You're thinking outside the box there, Sherry. And, you know, as I did see over the weekend when this topic came up, and thank you for the call there, Sherry. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
The union lost 2% of its population in the Civil War. That's the equivalent of over 6 million Americans dying in a war today. That's just an unfathomable toll to defeat slavery. So, I mean, you know, Sherry talks about her own family, and, you know, it's certainly not on the same level as someone whose family suffered through it, obviously. But that's where this there's no pun intended, black and white to this conversation. It's an incredible gray area. Paul is in Kansas City. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pete. Hey, don't underestimate these mayors. They are devilishly smart, and I'll tell you why. It's already been done. The last stimulus package put in a provision in there to relieve the debt of all black farmers to 120%. So they've already got the mechanisms in place to do this. And I think these mayors are pushing this forward because they want the Biden administration to start embedding with Bernie Sanders and the rest of them inside federal legislation to put in mechanisms like this. This is what they're doing. So they're clever. I know what they're doing. And Pelosi set up a committee before Biden got back from overseas. It's called the Committee of Equity, and it's an all-star lineup of Marxist AOC. And what they're going to do is, their manifesto is, private property is not a right. Mm-hmm. So they're going to start paying for this thing. You watch this committee that they've got set up on equity. It's going to be very interesting. But it's going to be through legislation, paid at the federal level, seizure of private property, things like that. Federal judge has blocked the farmer's piece, but we'll see how far that goes. But these mayors are clever. I see what they're doing.
So you think this is just – it's really just laying the foundation of pressure the feds is what you're saying.
That's right. Embed this in the infrastructure bill, whatever bill they push through – they will embed, just like the farmers' piece is the template of what they're going to do. That's mm-hmm. how AOC and these folks are going to run these things through, mm-hmm. Through reparations, whatever you want to call it. So,
yeah.
Mayor Lucas is clever. I see what they're doing. I mean, that's what I believe. They're laying the groundwork for it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, there. Thank you very much, Paul. Appreciate you. I mean, there is a long game, and that's why for people who are smart, as much as you know, you disagree with them. What is that long game? What is that next step? Paul may be onto something there. Steven's in Olathe. Go ahead there, Steven. Good morning.
So, Pete, what could go wrong? Kamala and Joe giving out reparations? what could go wrong in this situation?
Yeah, except Joe will be giving the reparations to Hunter, you know? I mean, that'll be the problem.
Listen,
Hunter will show up. Hunter will show up in blackface. He'll cut him a $10 million check.
Let him keep doing this, man. This is going to ensure that we're going to get back the house. I mean, we're talking about giving out black farmers loans based on the fact that, you know, forgiving their loans because they're black. I mean, listen. I may try and get a grant. I've got, you know, 2% black blood. I'm going to try and get a grant for my medical marijuana midnight basketball league at the Sprint Center. At this rate, if they're handing out dough hand over fist, you know, I can prevent inner city crime by giving 18-year-olds medical marijuana during the midnight basketball league if they have a doctor's note. I mean, let them. I don't think we should be stopping these guys. I think let Mayor Q, let him do whatever he wants when he comes on Thursday. Just give him an open floor. Just say, Mayor Q, tell me all about all the programs. I want you to ask him, say, Mayor Q, I want to know about every single program that you're going to use specifically with this new funding. If you get this new funding from the feds, let him tell you everything. I want to know all about this stuff. So we can run against it next year. I mean, this is like manna from heaven. Keep them talking, keep them going. God bless you.
All right. So Stephen is convinced that this is a political victory for 2020. There's no doubt that it is, right? There's no doubt that it is. Can you stay on message, though? That's my next question. Can you stay on message? Can you be smart about it? Can you stay on point? I mean, this is not, I don't think this is what most Americans are looking for here. I don't think this is what most people are all in on or dying for. Tom in Overland Park. Go ahead there, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Pete. Good morning, Kansas City. Hey, the comment about reparations, this is just a disguise for the further socialism agenda in the Democrat Party and the Liberal Party. I mean, that's just what this is. It's divisive. It increases sectionalism in our country. It's not the kind of unification that we really need. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a clever disguise for them to keep pushing more towards a social welfare state. And that's all I got for you.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. There's no doubt about it. That is a big part of it as well. I mean, if you're trying to, it's so strange to me that when these 11 mayors put together this letter and say we're all in on reparations, they act like there hasn't been a single program, and not just a single. I mean, we spent billions, if not trillions of dollars on various programs going back 50, 60, 70 years to try to right a lot of wrongs, right? To try to do a lot of this. Now, is it technically reparations? No. But the idea that we don't have programs or safety nets, or the government hasn't spent money on things like this, or hasn't spent enough money on things like this, I certainly haven't seen anywhere near the evidence of that, not even close to it. So we'll keep with reparations now on the table in Kansas City, apparently, and 11 other cities. We'll keep tabs on this one for sure, and we've got more on it throughout the morning. Coming up next, Mark McCloskey, running for U.S. Senate in Missouri. Of course, you know, the gun on the front lawn last year in St. Louis. He will join us coming up next because he's got an event coming up this weekend. And also, he had an interesting development in his legal case last week. He's next on KCMO. Well, it's a Monday morning. We're approaching 8 o'clock on KCMO Talk Radio, not just on 710 AM and 103.7 FM, but also download that KCMO Talk Radio app to listen to us anywhere at any time. And at this time, every Monday morning, we roll through the good, the bad, and the ugly from the weekend.
It's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly on KCMO Talk Radio.
Well, the good from the weekend. I got to use this, the good from the weekend, as a moment of pride. So went out to the Royals game on Saturday, saw that 7-1 loss to the Red Sox. A tough loss, for sure. But to me, it was about the experience. Took my old man there. Took my oldest daughter, Claire, there. And I'll tell you what, John, we lasted, and Mark, you guys will like this, we lasted till 2 outs in the ninth on a 95-degree afternoon game at the K with a 2.5-year-old. And we could have stayed till the end. We just decided, hey, 1 out left in a 6-run game, we'll try to beat some of the traffic with a 2.5-year-old. But she did not budge. She did not ask for mom. She was not looking for anything. We sat for 3 innings. We spent the next couple of innings doing walking around the stadium. She walked about half of it. I carried her the other half. And she was loving life. 2.5 years old, loving the baseball game.
Nice.
Did you go to the playground?
We did not go to. Where's the playground?
It's out in center, behind center field, behind the fountains. Yeah,
I did see that back there. Yes, but we did not go to the playground. We did not.
That they get stuck there if you take them there, so you might avoid it for as long as possible.
We did see there's a carousel. Is that out there? Is that center field or left field or something like that? Okay, she saw the carousel, and I just said, next time, gotta go, and just kept walking. So we skipped the carousel because that would have never ended. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
But we did not do anything like that, but we made it till 2 outs in the 9th, and she was yelling at me to clap when the Red Sox were scoring because she heard people clapping because there were quite a few Red Sox fans there. I was surprised. But she was into it, clapping away, and she was pumped. She was pumped.
Impressive.
Love to see it.
It was absolutely outstanding. So she was all over it. We had a great time. And it was just, taking the kids to the ball game is something that we did when Claire was, we did it 2 years ago. But at that point, she was like 8, 9 months old. But now they're starting to kind of get it. So it makes it a lot more fun. It really was a great time. And as my old man said, he felt like going to this Royals game was like a throwback baseball game to when you just went to a game to drink beer, eat hot dogs, and watch the game. You don't get as much of that anymore on some of the East Coast stadiums, but you get more of it, he said, here, and he felt like it was just a throwback to a generation ago watching a ball game. So he loved it, and Claire just was absolutely on cloud 9 at this Royals game on Saturday. So great time. I hope you guys had a great Father's Day as well. We certainly did. Now, the bad from the weekend, back to kind of a news angle here. Mike Pence was given a speech, and in the middle of Mike Pence just giving a speech and, talking about religious freedom and, pretty bedrock conservative principles at a Faith and Freedom Coalition event, he got drowned out by hecklers who were calling him a traitor. And this is the bad from the weekend.
It is great to be back with so many patriots dedicated to faith and freedom and the road to the majority. And I want to thank my friend Ralph Reed for those overly generous words. I'm deeply humbled by them. Ralph Reed knows me well enough to know the introduction I prefer is a little bit shorter. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order, and I am honored to stand before you today.
All right, anybody calling Mike Pence and screaming and heckling Mike Pence as a traitor, I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous. It is completely ridiculous to be screaming at Mike Pence and calling him a traitor because you claimed that he should have rejected the Electoral College votes. I mean, I'm sorry, if that's still something that you're going to stand on and like, oh, Mike Pence, he's a traitor. No. And Mike Pence is as solid when you just talk about conservative credentials. If that's important to you, right? Put all the nonsense aside. If just conservative credentials are important to you, Mike Pence is right up there. I mean, he's not maybe the best, and I don't know if there is a best when it comes to politicians. But you want to talk about a guy who can put up his solid conservative credentials up against just about anybody. I mean, that's Mike Pence. You want to talk about just genuinely solid people. If there were more Mike Pences, forget what his political leanings are, just solid individuals. A guy who doesn't walk into a room with women unless his wife is with him. You want to talk about solid guys, maybe to a fault, Mike Pence is on that list. And for people to be yelling at him and calling him a traitor at a Faith and Freedom event, I mean, that's just completely ludicrous and ridiculous. I'm sorry. And I put it up on Twitter, and I know that, some people got triggered by it. But I'll bring it up here again, because that is crazy to be doing that to a guy like Mike Pence. I know everyone's, none of us are pleased with how things went the last few months. But, Mike, if you're taking your energy out and your anger out on Mike Pence, you got to check yourself, all right? Oops, wrong. I hit the wrong button. There we go. I got so wrapped up, I just start hitting random buttons on the screen.
I mean, F them.
Anyway, the ugly from the weekend. Let's share the ugly. Former Chiefs quarterback Tyler Palko arrested early Sunday morning for a DUI. Yes, right here in Johnson County. I guess he kept his roots here. I looked him up. He only played a handful of games here back in 2010 and 2011.
Yep.
That was the down years there for the Chiefs. But
he played a total of 8 games back in 2010 and 2011. But I guess he's still living here. And the guy got busted for a DUI. 12:15 Sunday morning, released just after 5 a.m. on $1,300 cash bond. Took over for Matt Castle back in 2011 after he was injured. Went 1-3 as a starter. Led the Chiefs to only 2 touchdowns in that period as they slid out of playoff contention in 2011. Was released by the team at the end of the season. But he's still here in Johnson County getting DUIs, apparently. What do you got?
Todd Haley loved the guy. Yeah, I guess he's a vice president of sales and marketing at a company in Overland Park.
Oh, that's the way to do it, by the way. When you're a washed-up quarterback, just go sell vacuums.
If I'm Tyler and I got a few snaps, I'm staying in that city for any free meals I can get for the next 20 years. So, you know, unfortunately, this is the downside to hanging around.
5767710. Coming up next, trans weightlifter in the Olympics. Oh, yeah. We'll get to it coming up. Remember they told us, oh, this is, you know, when it comes to transgender athletes, stop. It's not going to really have an impact on anything, on any scores, any events. It's a boogeyman being used by conservatives to score political points. Well, now you could have a transgender person winning Olympic gold medals. Does that matter? Does that count? Is that a big deal? You better believe it is. You better believe it. Happy Monday morning. Good to be back with you on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM and 103.7 FM, plus the KCMO Talk Radio app. So in New Zealand, yes, we've got New Zealand going ahead with a transgender female. I always forget that. It's transgender female would be someone who has gone from male to female, right? That'd be a transgender female, not a transgender male.
That's right.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got my woke status properly set up. I don't want to, you know, insult anybody. I'd hate to do that.
Talk about a bombshell.
I know. So we've got this New Zealand weightlifter, Laurel Hubbard, who is one of the 5 weightlifters selected to the New Zealand team. And why would you not select her? Because she's really a guy. Hubbard, who won the silver at the 2017 World Championships and represented New Zealand at the 2018 Commonwealth Games before suffering a serious injury in competition, will become the first transgender athlete to compete at the Olympics this summer. While she would be the oldest weightlifter at the Games, she will also be a genuine medal hopeful. Yes, she's a medal hopeful, and how could you not be? By the way, she's got great armpit hair. You should see the armpit hair here, too. Great armpit hair. The weightlifting team includes 4 other females. And Hubbard's historic achievement, as it writes here in this New Zealand article, for trans athletes will also likely spark controversy from others who insist she has an unfair advantage. Well, she does have an unfair advantage, okay? She does. I'm not insisting it. I'm not trying to make this controversial. I'm simply trying to point out the science. But here's the thing. Back in 2015, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, did issue new guidelines allowing athletes who transition from male to female to compete in the women's category, provided their testosterone levels are below 10, whatever the factor is that they test testosterone based on, for at least 12 months prior to the first competition. This rule is also followed by the International Weightlifting Federation. But, as the article properly notes, recent studies suggest transgender women maintain an athletic advantage over their cisgender peers even 1 year after hormone therapy. So, yes, you have now, and you will see this play out this summer, and I can't wait to see how NBC covers this. I'm sure that, you know, they'll get a half-hour commercial-free with Lester Holt after this lady wins a Olympic gold medal. Lester Holt will just be like, the floor is yours, sir, ma'am, whatever you want to call yourself, the floor is yours. Take it away. Like, this is just the first of what could be many transgenders who end up winning Olympic gold medals, or just Olympic medals in general, especially since the IOC has said they're basically cool with this. So if this is the trend center, if this weightlifter from New Zealand wins a medal, and you know the media is going to fawn over this person, right? They're going to go bonkers if he ends up winning medals in female weightlifting. I said when this was a hot topic, and it has been over the last few months, but I said it a couple months back, I said, if I were a male fill-in-the-blank Olympic athlete, sprinter, swimmer, whatever it might be, why would I not transition? Like, seriously, why would I not? If I wanted to win Olympic gold medals and pack on and get tons of social media followers and become an influencer and get on the cover of, Time magazine and get fawned over by pathetic American press, why would I not transition? It makes too much sense. If you can't compete against the guys, you can transition, you can compete against the girls, and you can be a hero to American media. I mean, what's her name? What's the soccer player who's now the face of Victoria's Secret? Megan Rapinoe, right? I mean, as a lesbian, she's going to be old news once these transgenders start taking over. I mean, seriously, she's going to be an afterthought. It's going to be all about the transgenders and how they're winning Olympic golds and how much they've overcome. Meantime, they're actually preventing women from winning medals. So watch how this plays out this summer. This is going to be fascinating to follow. And then as someone, and I like watching the Olympics, by the way, I really enjoy Summer Olympics, especially someone who liked track, who was involved in it as well. I really like the Summer Olympics. But you know how they have all those kind of feel-good packages that go on between events? This is going to be package A, B, C, and D. I can see it playing out right now. They're going to love this story about this New Zealand transgender weightlifter. I mean, it's going to be all over the Olympic coverage. They're going to love it, John. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I know that the left is fond of going back and relitigating the past and things like that. So why are we going to ignore that Bruce Jenner competed?
Oh, yeah.
Now Caitlin.
Yeah.
So not the first.
By the way, Caitlin for governor, baby.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Dealing in fits with that, too, as a Republican.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm like, why wouldn't you go back and celebrate Bruce's effort?
Yeah. And here's what I wish. That's so true. And here's what I want to ask you. What are you going to tell your kids? Like, if your kids are old enough to kind of get what's going on. And let's say this New Zealand weightlifter, ends up winning medals and there's packages on her every night on NBC. Like, what are you going to tell your kids as NBC celebrates this and you're sitting there just trying to watch some wholesome Olympics with your children, watch somebody run 100 meters and maybe try to break Usain Bolt's record? Like, what are you going to tell them? Like, my daughter's too young, so she's not going to know what's going on. But if you've got children, you're trying to explain all this to them and you're like, hey, wait, that used to be a guy and now she's a girl and now she's winning medals. Well, doesn't that take a medal away from an actual female mom? Doesn't that take an actual medal away from a female dad? Yeah, but you don't get it. In the day and age of wokeness winning, that doesn't matter. The science doesn't matter unless it matters. You see, that's how this works. Okay.
Maybe I'm just a little bit off here, but I think since it's a weightlifter, I don't think they're going to be featured that much as you're thinking.
Well, you're right, traditionally, Mark.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, when it comes to pushing the message, that's more important than the sport.
Okay.
I mean, I would agree. Weightlifting gets no attention. I can't name a single weightlifter in the world.
They're on the, like, off NBC channel.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. They're not even on NBC Sports Network. They're on, like, the stream.
Yeah,
stream them
exactly.
On the Peacock, You're right about that. No one cares about weightlifting. But if they can push an agenda, weightlifting's going to be prime time, for a week straight. That's what's going to happen.
They'll cut in.
Yeah, yeah.
In case you missed this last night while you were sleeping on another channel far away.
Look at this dude who's now a chick. Deadlift 750 pounds. Woo! All right. Life is good. Push the message, baby. And it made me think back to my conversation with Mayor Lucas back in March when this became an issue. And we had a spirited back and forth about it. Simpler times, before the police and before the reparations and everything else.
Simpler times.
Simpler times when we could just talk about guys being chicks and, the whole thing. These really were simpler times. I thought about the conversation I had with the mayor then. And I want to replay a clip for you from that conversation and also get to your calls at 576-7710. As we now have a transgender female in the Olympics, how much attention will she get? What will the impact be? How will NBC cover it? What are you going to ultimately tell your kids when you're just trying to watch the Olympics on a Tuesday night and they're going to jam that down your throat? Because you know what's going to happen, right? It's all coming up, 576-7710. Monday morning, good to be back with you on KCMO Talk Radio. So you're going to be watching the Olympics, a little family fun this summer, and then you're going to see a transgender weightlifter on the screen. The media is going to fawn over her. She'll probably get tons of publicity, and then you'll say to the kids, don't worry about it. It's just the media being the media. What are you going to say when you've got this weightlifter in New Zealand who is a transgender female who has made the Olympic team and is already getting some worldwide publicity? Yes, some worldwide publicity for Laurel Hubbard is her name. His name, her name, I don't know. I can't help but look at the armpit hair as she's about to do a clean and press, you know, right up there. Boom, push, push, push. Oh, gosh. And I was reading this story this morning, and I thought to myself, boy, this reminds me of when Mayor Lucas and I had a really good conversation back and forth on this topic back in March, because there was a story about the Kansas City dad who had gone down to Jeff City with a transgender child and had advocated on behalf, as he viewed it, the transgender community to come out and basically say, hey, our transgender kids, male to female, should be allowed to compete in female sports. Now, I vehemently disagree with it. I believe many of you do as well. I can't speak for everybody, obviously. I just speak for myself, but I imagine many of you do agree with me on this. But the mayor disagreed with me on this. Now, this was also, this father of this transgender child in Kansas City was his friend, so there was certainly a personal angle to it. But I'll never forget when I asked the mayor this question about, you know, with me having two daughters, at the time I only had one, what I should tell her if one day she were to lose, or any daughter, any your daughter, was to lose one day to a transgender female. Here was our back and forth on this back in March. What would you say, Mr. Mayor, you know, if you were the father of a young girl and, you know, she lost a track meet or something to a transgender girl, what would you say to that person?
You know, what I would continue to say is to work harder, to strive harder, and that really I think a lot of sports is competing with yourself.
Now, it's really not. I mean, the Olympics aren't a self-competition. You're trying to get a gold medal. And by the way, the difference between being a gold medal winner and a silver medal winner in your sport when it comes to endorsements and it comes to attention is enormous. No one will know the silver medal winner if she loses to the transgender female in the weightlifting competition this summer, okay? The transgender female will gather up all the attention, all the space, and the silver medal winner is going to be like, yep, could have been me, but, you know, I'm competing against a dude now. So, my odds aren't looking so good. And then here was our follow-up on that conversation with the mayor back in March. But how do you tell a young girl when scientifically, I mean, you know, we've got 300 high school boys who are faster than the fastest female in the U.S. How do you say to somebody, work harder, when biologically, on average, it's you know, biologically impossible because of what we know the science is, the differences are between men and women and boys and girls?
You know, what I would say, and these questions are sharp today, so thank you. I say work harder because you are largely just competing against yourself in most of these pursuits. I think what we need to teach, and this will start a whole other debate, is can you be proud of how you did? Can you be proud of what you did? And that doesn't always mean that you come in first place. It means that you put your all on the line and you ran the best darn race you possibly could.
All right. So that was those were simpler times when the mayor and I could just talk about transgenderism and trendies in sports, and now we can't do that anymore because there's too much serious stuff happening in Kansas City. But, I think about that, and I think about just, you know, the different opinions that we have, and that's why I always enjoy talking to the mayor, because it's a spirited back and forth on some issues, whether it's this or police or whatever it might be. And I think about how difficult it is going to be for young girls to watch this and try to make sense of it. Because I can't, and I don't know what I'd tell them. I really don't have a clue what I'd tell them if my daughters were old enough to understand what was going on. 5767710, what do you got for me, John, before I hit some
of
the phones?
You've kind of been through this as an older person watching the Olympics when East Germany had a team, so some of the women on there look like men anyway. So, you know, the questions have already been asked and answered.
Zach, you're on KCMO. Hi, Zach. Good morning.
Morning, Pete.
What do you got?
Hey, if my grandkids or my adult children ask me, what do you think about this? I would tell them, well, this person is mentally messed up, and physically weak. If they're a man who transitioned to a woman so they can compete on the woman's side of things, that just shows they are physically weak. They didn't train enough. They didn't do whatever it took enough so that way they could compete against themselves in the Olympics and get a gold medal mm-hmm. on the women's team. Now, if a woman... If a woman wants to compete against a men's on the men's team and she is physically capable, that's female empowerment to the highest extent. If she is that good.
Mm-hmm. You know, Zach, first like off, couple things there. You're right. It's in many ways this whole conversation for those that scream about female empowerment. This is the antithesis of female empowerment, saying that they should have to compete against biological men. And if they don't win, well, you know what? You compete against yourself anyway, and it is what it is. It's the antithesis of female empowerment, right?
Yes, it is. Well, if you look back during World War II, the females who were at home who took on jobs, I would call them a feminist because they left their current role of being a housewife and a mom to work in the factories. You know, they may have got an email off the finger, you know, building a B-52 or a B-29. But now, if you look at the feminists now, they freak out if you have a different opinion on it. So I guess women have gotten weaker.
Say that again, that last part. Who's gotten weaker?
Feminist women have gotten weaker than their predecessors in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, thanks for that, Zach. I think you're onto something there for sure. When you think about just where we're at and how the conversation, I mean, you want to talk about pretzel twisting, right? How you go from pro-woman, rah-rah female, whether it's in the workplace and sports, which I'm all, by the way, who's not in favor of that? Father of two daughters, who's not rah-rah woman, rah-rah female empowerment? You can do whatever a male can do, no doubt about it. But when it comes to biologically being able to compete, you just can't. You can't on average, that's the key. Doesn't mean that a female can't be a male at a race, but on average, biologically, you simply can't do it. And it's amazing that I think we're going to get to the Olympics, and this is going to be a story, all right? I firmly believe that. That's not me overstating it. That's just understanding where the tea leaves are at and the stories that they're going to want to tell, and this is going to be at the top of the list.
Well, and I think we'll find out about other companies or countries' prejudices.
Yeah.
We're all debating it from the U.S. perspective. We might hear more uproar from other nations.
That's a great point, John. That is a great point. News in 3 minutes. We're back in five on what is disqualifying anymore in politics. You tell me. We'll get to it next. Man, it's 2021. We allow ourselves to basically get away with whatever we want, it seems like. Culturally, politically, it's a different world even than just a generation ago. When Bill Clinton was in the White House, right? It's different. But maybe that's when all this started. I don't know. Maybe it's when things kind of started going off the rails a little bit and we started letting anything slide if they were in our political camp, in our political party. But my question for you, I saw this story over the weekend, and my question for you is, like, where do you draw the line? Where you say what somebody does in their personal life, in their personal environment, matters to me. It matters as to whether or not I want them to represent me in Congress, whether it's the House, the Senate, the White House, heck, the city council, heck, the school board. Now, we don't have the kind of opposition research for school board members that we do for, obviously, congressional members and congressional races and presidencies, of course. But I saw this and I thought, wow, I mean, maybe people just don't care. So remember the story about 2 years ago? Wow, it was 2 years ago. I thought it was last year, but I don't know. The last 14 months are a distant memory at this point. They all just kind of flow together. Katie Hill, California congresswoman. She resigned in the fall of 2019 because of a throuple sex scandal. She said in a new interview to Axios on HBO that she now believes the scandal was politically survivable. And she says that she may actually run for office once again. Now, this to me was not just somebody being in a throuple, which, you know what that is? Is that a part of your lexicon, John? Are you familiar with that at all? Throuples?
I know what it means, but yeah, not part of my lexicon.
Okay. All right. Me neither.
It was called menage a trois if you're French.
Mark, is that anything you have any experience with, just out of curiosity?
I've never even heard that until right now.
Oh, wow. Gosh, so innocent.
I'm behind the times.
Yeah, you got to get with it, man. Thropples are, you know, that's big 21st century stuff here. Anyway, she was in a thropple with her now ex-husband and a 22-year-old female staffer. What are you laughing at in there?
Well, we're going to have quad pulls and quint pulls and sex pulls. And...
Yeah, keep going, baby.
Yeah, right.
I mean, at some point, it just becomes an orgy. I wonder that line is.
Is it going to have two or more?
What is that? How do you get there? Is it five? I mean, is it four?
I have looked that up before. It's five, I believe.
It's five?
Yeah.
Five? So you've looked up. Wait, hold on a second. You didn't know what a thropple was, but you've looked up what defines an orgy.
Now, this is, I don't want to get too off topic, but.
Please don't.
Okay. I'll just let you back to it.
Okay. All right. But you've looked that up before. Okay. All right. So important research being done by Mark behind the scenes on KCMO Talk Radio. So she resigned in October of 19 after being in a throuple with her now ex-husband and her 22-year-old female campaign staffer. She was also accused of having a separate affair with her male legislative director, which kicked off an investigation by the House Ethics Committee and the Federal Elections Commission. This is what made this story unique, by the way. It wasn't that she was into that all that stuff. It's that it was involving staffers and people that worked for her. That's what made this inappropriate, right? It's not that she was into weird stuff in her personal life. It's that she was doing it with people who were under her supervision. Now, if she's saying, and one of the things that she has said is, well, I could have survived this politically. Look at Andrew Cuomo. I mean, if that's your standard, then yes. I mean, Andrew Cuomo, the amount that that guy has gotten away with politically and personally, when you talk about some of the misconduct allegations. Now, you know, you want to say there's something different between sleeping with a staffer, which Katie Hill did, and Cuomo saying something that can come across as poor taste. Okay, there obviously is a difference there. But yes, Andrew Cuomo, because of the power of his name, of his family, of the media protection that he's received due to the family name, is obviously much different than what a congressional member in California would receive who has, you know, no pull anywhere close to Andrew Cuomo. That is true. There's no doubt about it. That is true. But for Katie Hill to view herself in the same environment, in the same coupling as Andrew Cuomo, to me is kind of her getting a little too confident. But I do wonder, like, if you're someone who's looking at this and you care about politics, and how much do you factor in the personal conduct of somebody? I mean, obviously, Donald Trump is case in point, right? The whole argument around Trump was, well, I mean, the guy's been married a bunch of times and, you know, he's got children with different women. And I mean, that's not what presidents do. People aren't looking for presidents like that, right? It was always about squeaky clean, squeaky clean, squeaky clean. Well, you know, Trump was different, right, from that standpoint. And people still voted him into the White House and made him the president. Was that just a sign of the times? Or is it a sign of what is to come, where people are putting that stuff aside and saying, hey, if I believe that your policies work for me, I will set aside your personal foibles. I will say, hey, whatever mistakes you may have made or the fact that you've been married and divorced multiple times, I don't care about if I think that your policies help me out. 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. And that's where I'm curious to hear from you on how much you care about this stuff and how much you think Americans really care about this stuff anymore. Pete, what is the word? Sounds like you're saying brothel, but it's obvious. Throuple. T-H. Take me through it. T-H-R-O-U-P-L-E. That is the word. So you can go look it up on your spare time. All right. Just don't hit when you Google the word, don't click the images tab. That might be bad for you, especially if you're at work. OK.
Or put .com after it.
Not safe for work.
That's yes. But that's the word if you really want to go look it up. But what made the Katie Hill story different to me is that it involved, and it was obviously with staffers. That's what made that story different. I don't think she's got a political future. I mean, there's enough Democrats in California. You don't need to go down the rabbit hole with Katie Hill anymore. But it is interesting that she's like, no, I could have survived this. I shouldn't have given up, but I did it because I was part of the Me Too movement and part of the Me Too female empowerment drive. It's like, I don't really get how those two things coexist, but, you know, that's the case that she is making. So we'll get to you on that. And I also need to share this with you here. So I got this letter from the IRS. June 4th. So I haven't checked my mail in a while. It's labeled, I mean, unless it took forever because the post office is all screwed up. But I got it. It was dated June 4th. I just opened it over the weekend. And it says here, Pete, you may be eligible to receive advance payments of the child tax credit. If you're eligible for advanced CTC payments and want to receive these payments, you don't need to take action. You will receive a letter with more details. The American Rescue Plan, signed into law back in March, made important changes to the child tax credit for most taxpayers in 2021. The credit amounts increased for many taxpayers, and the credit is fully refundable, which means taxpayers can benefit from the credit even if they don't owe any income taxes. The credit also includes qualifying children who turn age 17 in 2021. Now, remember, we told you about this when this thing was signed into law. The American Rescue Plan directs the IRS to make advanced monthly payments of half of the estimated annual child tax credit. The IRS will make payments from July through the end of this year. For tax year 2021, the advanced child tax credit payments will be half of the estimated CTC. The maximum annual CTC will be $3,000 per qualifying child between the ages of 6 and 17, and $3,600 per qualifying child under the age of 6. In general, qualifying children must live with the taxpayer in the U.S. for more than half the year. So this is basically the same threshold as what you had with the stimulus checks. $75,000 or less for single taxpayers, $150,000 or less for married couples filing a joint return. You will get basically a check from the government for $300 per month for children under the age of 6. And then, I guess, what would it be here if I divide this math up really quickly? Let's see. 250. 250 if your kids are over the age of 6. So how old are your kids there, Mark? You got what, an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old?
8 and a 5-year-old.
But 8 and 5?
She turned 6 at the end of July, so I'm going to get a quick only a 250 for her after this
After the first month. So the government's going to be paying people if you got kids. Now, I don't know what that means for me with Chloe, because Chloe was just born in May, so that's probably going to matter on my 2021 tax return. But this is the government buying your vote. This is the federal government sending me a letter saying, hey, don't forget, Joe Biden signed this thing in the law. And, you know, he's going to give you some money here coming up because you got kids. Meantime, John's in there shaking his head saying, damn, should have had my kids at a different time. You know, it pays to have your kids right now, John. And I don't know if that's something that you've re-entertained here in recent months, but I'm just saying you may want to consider it because they're giving away money. IRS is sending out letters here.
Son, meet your two grandsons that are older than you.
Gosh. I mean, this is the government buying my vote. That's what this is. Now, they don't want you to talk about the inflation that's happening, right? They don't want to hear about that. But they're happy to let you know and send you a letter from the IRS saying, hey, we're taking care of you, Pete. All right? We got money coming your way thanks to old boy Joe. Doesn't know what day of the week it is.
What are we talking about?
But he's sending you some money. 576-7710. We are approaching 9 o'clock on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM and 103.7 FM. Your smartphones, your smart speakers as well. I still got to get back into reparations in Kansas City. I can't believe this is something that Kansas City is apparently on board with. It's all coming up on 710 AM and 103.7 FM. Wow, Ron DeSantis, Florida governor, getting love over Donald Trump. How about that? Yeah, this came out over the weekend. Approval voting of a straw poll held at the Western Conservative Summit in Denver, Colorado on Saturday shows Trump neck and neck with DeSantis. Yeah, in a poll, participants of the poll voted for 31 potential presidential candidates that they approve of for the upcoming 2024 presidential election. DeSantis scored the highest approval rating with 74%, defeating Trump, who came in second with 71%. Third in that poll was Texas Senator Ted Cruz, 43%, followed by former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who was on the show last week. And you can catch that interview on our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Search Pete Mundo, search KCMO. We had Mike Pompeo on a week ago tomorrow, actually. And Tim Scott at 36%. Mike Pence came in 10th place with 21%. But the top five, once again, in order: Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Mike Pompeo, Tim Scott. All right? That's what it came out as with approval ratings, basically, at the Western Conservative Summit in Denver, Colorado on Saturday. I thought, if you told me going into it, how would this shake out? I would have said Trump in the mid to high 70s, DeSantis in the mid to high 60s, and then a big drop off from there. The fact that Ron DeSantis is beating Donald Trump is a big deal. And by the way, that gap probably only grows. And that's not meant to be a knock on Trump, all right? But let's just understand, politics moves quickly. Politics is about who's the next face, who's the fresh face. I mean, unless you're Joe Biden and you find yourself in a primary with 27 other people, and you get a lucky endorsement in South Carolina the night before Election Day. Unless you're Joe,
come on, man.
Most people are looking ahead. All right, and Ron DeSantis has become the rock star next guy in conservative politics. And I'm fine with that, by the way. In fact, as of right now, with everything I know, I love that. First off, I've always liked the idea of a governor more than a U.S. senator, because they actually run something. All right. They don't just grandstand all day. Not that being a U.S. senator is not an important job. It is. But if you're telling me, hey, I want an executive, well, that's what governors are. They're executives. Being the president, obviously a much bigger executive role than being a governor, but you got an idea on how to run something. I mean, senators, you can just kind of do what you want, all right? You go on the TV, you say what you want, you write what you want. You're not really running much. You're just not. So I've always preferred, if all else was equal, give me a governor over a U.S. senator. And then when it comes to give me a businessman, maybe over a governor. But there's a lot of things that are equal about those two roles. In many ways, a governor is a businessman, but he understands the way the government operates. So I've always been privy and preferential to governors. But to see what Ron DeSantis has done down there, and to see how he's done it in the state of Florida over just the last, couple of years, has been very impressive. And the fact that already he is at 74% approval and he's beating Trump by a couple of points tells me that that gap is only going to grow. Because I would have thought it would have been reversed. I don't know about you at 576-7710, but I would have thought it would have been reversed in terms of how this poll would have shaken out. But we're only, 6-7 months from the election, and already DeSantis is leading it. And to me, that's smart. It's smart. Once again, it's not meant to be a knock on Trump in any way, but it's thinking to who and what is next. I believe the media is scared to death of having to deal with a guy like Ron DeSantis on the national stage. I don't think they want any part of a guy like Ron DeSantis on the national stage. Why do you think they've done all these hit pieces on him? Whether it's local journalism, as I put up the air quotes, down in the state of Florida, or it's like 60 Minutes and that crap. I mean, they have tried to do more damage in that 60 Minutes piece to Ron DeSantis than they've ever come close to attempting on Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, whose track record is horrible on COVID-19. But then 60 Minutes does this piece somehow like Ron DeSantis is in bed with Publix, the local grocery store, because they're a donor to get people vaccinated. I mean, it's the biggest grocery chain in the state. That's why they're using them. It was a non-scandal scandal that 60 Minutes tried to make up. Why are they doing it? They're trying to knock him down a couple of pegs. And everything I've seen from Ron DeSantis shows me that this guy can blend Trumpism with maybe what you would call more traditional conservatism. And he's also very good with the media. He can be the tough guy, but he can be the really smart guy as well. When I watch Ron DeSantis in media interviews, whether it's a gaggle of reporters or one-on-one, I just get the sense that he's a step ahead of them. That he's thinking ahead, he's thinking of what's next. And he does so in a way that, you know, he's got some Trump lines when he talks to the media, when he talks back to the media. But he's not full-blown Trumpian, and nobody ever can do that again, right? Trump was so unique. When I see these politicians running for office trying to be Donald Trump, it's like, stop. Okay, there's one. Stop. Just stop. Let it go. You're not them. You're not
such
him.
A cute soundbite.
Leave it. Let it be. Okay? But when I see DeSantis, I see a blend of Trump with the conservatism, with the wit, with the smarts. I just get more and more impressed every time. And when I saw this poll, I'm like, man, I'm all in on that. On the text line, Ron DeSantis, Tim Scott, 2024, Trump for governor of Florida. Oh, man, I see what you did there. Media focuses on Trump. DeSantis gets left alone. That is from Aaron on the text line. You want to talk about a guy thinking a couple steps ahead. That's Aaron thinking a couple steps ahead on the text line. That's the text of the morning. Now, if you lose the state of Florida, that wouldn't be good for Republicans, but I love what Aaron thought of there, John. That's genius.
Yep, 3D chess.
3D chess. That's Aaron on the text line. He's playing some 3D chess. Way to go there, bud. Way to go. I have heard, I don't know if you guys, you know, I've seen this thing, by the way, if Trump's going to run for a House seat down in Florida, House of Representatives seat, and then he would be Speaker of the House if they were able to flip the House of Representatives. That would be wild. Yeah, Trump whacking the gavel in there in the House of Representatives, sitting in Pelosi's chair. You know, he would take some real joy in that, wouldn't he? Oh, gosh, he'd love that. And that would be hilarious, by the way. But something tells me that's not going to happen because that's way too much. There's way too much nitty-gritty work that you got to do. And why would Trump want to do that at pushing 80 years old with what he's been through the last several years? I don't see him going down that road. But the imagery of it, of Trump as Speaker of the House banging the gavel, does it brings a smile to my face. I'll put it that way. It cracks me up. Just the thought of it is pretty good. Also on the text line, there's a whole lot of difference between being a governor and being a senator. The most a senator can run is a committee. That's exactly right. That's why I'm always preferring a governor. If all else is equal, absolutely on the same page as going down the road with a governor. No doubt about that. We'll get to you at 576-7710. But I do need to share with you on Mission Monday here a great cause that is taking place with our friends at the Battle Within. They are a local organization that helps out veterans and first responders in their journey back from PTSD. They've got a really cool event coming up. I will tell you about it, and we'll get to your calls as well on KCMO Talk Radio. Our caller of the day is just after 9:30 on 710 AM, 103.7 FM, plus your smartphones and smart speakers.